Come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together, we get better. In person, January 12th through 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, weekend-long big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, plus a boutique where you can shop till you drop. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night? Book your room now at a discounted rate through the oabirthday.com website and act fast because rooms sell out quickly. There is a solution. You'll hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together, we get better.
Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find several speaker feeds with over 800 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed in the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Debbie.
I'm Debbie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Debbie.
I am not an overly emotional person, but when Michelle said the main speaker, it just totally took me up because I am, this is not the person you should see standing up here, you know. First of all, I want to say welcome to Sarah. I'm really happy you're here, and congratulations to Katie and Chloe and Jesse. Really happy for you guys. And I'm sorry for getting choked up, but I will say food has been a problem for me. I have been a compulsive overeater, I believe, my entire life. And that's why I'm choked up, because it defies explanation that I'm abstinent for as long as I'm abstinent. I will say my abstinence date is September 7th, 1992. And my abstinence is no sugar or sugar-free desserts, no bread or bread-type stuff, because my sponsor told me to pick an abstinence that is doable. And for me, if I listed all the things that I could potentially overeat, I would not be able to eat. That's the kind of compulsive overeater I am. If some is good, more is better. That's how my brain is wired. And I want to thank my sponsor, Seppi, for asking me to come. So, as I said, I've been a compulsive overeater my whole life. I do not have many memories of my childhood because I spent so much time either eating or fantasizing or doing both that I was checked out. And many of the memories that I have involve food. So I remember at 4 years old thinking, I have to get out of here. I have to get out of here that I didn't understand at that time was I wanted to get out of here. I did not know that my surroundings were not my problem. So I'm the oldest of two girls, and both of my parents and my sister have passed away from effects of this disease. My dad was 65. My mom was 70, and my sister was 50. And I'm sorry, I'm gonna move this so I can see you more clearly. All of them were compulsive overeaters. I was completely and totally confused as a child because I was the thin one at home because I was smaller than the rest of them. But at school, I was fat, so I was totally confused about who I was, but I have been uncomfortable in my own skin from my earliest memory. I missed, you know, connecting. I'm an isolator. from the word go. And I remember a slumber party that I so wanted to be included, and everybody was in the other room having a wonderful time, and I was in the kitchen rifling through things, trying to figure out what I could eat. And I so wanted to be included, but I wanted the food more. And I couldn't connect in a meaningful way. And I had friends. I had a lot of friends. I also have a problem with drugs and alcohol, which, factored in. I smoked a lot of pot, which definitely pot and food go together really well. and that was my thing. I would get stoned and I would eat. And that started when I was about 15 or 16 years old. And anything I could use to check me out was what I wanted. And I am the person in the big book that they talk about that lives a double life, because I'm an overachiever at school. I did really well in school. And even though I never studied, I paid attention and took notes in class. And somehow or another, I kept getting away with it and getting good grades. And I remember being in gym class. I come from a family. My mother told me, the type of person that I am, that we're not athletic. And I thought, this is the best news ever. I got a pass, right? Seriously. Because I only wanted to live my life from here up. I didn't want to be in my body. So hearing that we're not athletic felt like done. You know, I don't have to do anything. But in gym class, I was always last. I'm old, I'm 67. So we had these uniforms that had snaps. And everybody had the same uniform. And I remember being terrified. I didn't know if the snaps were going to burst open or not. And that did definitely happen more than once. We also all had to take a shower together afterwards. And I didn't want to be naked with other girls who looked beautiful, had no issues with their bodies. But I was all about hiding. So fast forward, I will say I have missed out on a lot of life because of this disease. I dated some, I've had boyfriends, I was engaged once, but it was always like to unavailable people because I was unavailable. And I did very well in college. I ended up literally falling into a career because I wanted to go to San Francisco, and this particular company, if you interviewed well on campus, you got a free trip to San Francisco. So this is, this is who you're dealing with. That's who came into these rooms, extremely shallow in the moment. What can I get out of it? That's how I am, if left to my own devices. So I never did any exercise my entire life. I would smoke cigarettes. I mean, I was using everything I could just to get out. And I was also an overachiever at work. I did really well and kept getting promoted. And it was never enough, It just was never enough. It never filled whatever it was that I was looking for that was, now I know, a real spiritual malady. I was looking to fill that spiritual hole with achieving, with substances, with other people, and none of it worked. It might work for a minute, but then it left me feeling even worse afterwards. So my fiance, I'll leave that whole story out, but he was unavailable in the worst. He was gay. He's gay. So there you have it. But he, at that time, was not. So, and he was an alcoholic. We would drink. We would fight. I would cook. We would, you know, anyway, we would eat, drink, and fight. And we became friends, and still we spent an enormous amount of time together. And he came to me one day and he said, "I think I'm an alcoholic." And my reaction was, "He's not going to go to the wine country with me now." Honest, may God strike me dead. That was my first thought, you know. So anyway, that's a whole other story. But he went to AA, and I went to AA and got sober. And when I got sober, the food got so much worse because I didn't have anything that was, you know, partially anesthetizing me. So it got far worse. And I tried, a dear friend of mine tried taking me to a couple of OA meetings, and this is just my story. I'll tell you, I'm an expert in eating. I am not an expert in OA. But she tried taking me to a couple of meetings, and for me, things got worse. And my AA sponsor at the time said, "You know, I would suggest working the steps in this program before you try to take something else on." So that was what I did. So when I had about a year and a half of sobriety, I tried to come back. And my AA sponsor said, "Here's Seppi. She's going to be your sponsor." Honestly. So she assigned my sponsor to me. Seppi's been my sponsor since 1992. So that could make me cry also, in a good way, not in a bad way. Anyway, I'm really, really grateful for you. So, you know, in working the steps of this program, I'll tell you what I'm like today. First of all, the way that we worked the steps was there were 30 questions that we answered that take you through the big book and the 12 and 12, the AA 12 and 12, to answer questions about my eating. And it was a very powerful experience. And then I wrote an inventory that was 182 questions. If I had known when I started, when I signed on for this, that I was going to do that. Oh, anyway, it was a very powerful experience that I will tell you. It took forever. But really, really grateful. But the thing that those first three steps gave me was I realized that I believed that there was a God. I just didn't believe that that God had anything to do with me. And I certainly didn't think that God had anything to do with my food. So in writing about the second step specifically, one of the questions was, you know, to put down reasons for believing in God and reasons for not believing in God. And that exercise, even though it sounds very elementary, was very powerful for me because I could see when I really could dig deep that there were so many times that literally my higher power snatched me out of a situation that I couldn't have extricated myself. So that was extremely helpful to me. The other thing that I did was when I started in AA, my sponsor told me, "Get on your knees and ask your higher power to keep you sober and then abstinent. And thank your higher power for the gift at the end of the day," because it's impolite to not thank someone for a gift, right? And this is as good a gift as I've ever received. But anyway, so I took those actions even though I did not believe in a higher power at all. I take that back. I did believe in a higher power. I didn't believe in a personal higher power. So by taking those actions that I thought were for you guys, and I did not believe would work, I realized the AA 12 and 12 talks about it, that we can come to realize at some point that we actually have a relationship with a higher power that we didn't realize that we had. And I had that exact experience because I took the actions. And what I learned here is I always waited till I felt like doing something, and I never felt like it. here I learned that if I take the action, it is going to change how I feel. And that just didn't make any sense to me, but I did what they told me. I would help clean up the room or set up the room. I would help, you know, do whatever somebody asked of me because I was asked, and that's what I was told to do. And I was given a really good structure when I started, and very good sponsorship as an example. And I was taught that I always say yes. So if there's any possible way that I can do something, I say yes. And especially where a meeting is concerned, I can always say yes. And the other thing that I learned was to try to help another person. And what I learned was if I have 2 days, I can help somebody with 1 day. If I have 1 day, I can help somebody with no days. And that's how I was brought up. And service and watching the lights come on in another woman's eyes has been the cash and prizes. You talk about the cash. For me, that's the cash and prizes, is being able to see somebody else get it and all of a sudden have a life that they didn't have previously. And so all these years later, what happened was I prayed on my knees for the willingness to exercise. I did not believe that it was going to work. I prayed on my knees for over a year for the willingness to exercise. And a friend of mine was a runner, and she had thin thighs. And I said, can you teach me how to run? She said, you might want to try walking for 10 minutes. So I tried walking for 10 minutes, and I said, how do you breathe? I don't know. I can't do that, right? I mean, I can walk from here to there, but I did not know how to, you know, try to get some exercise and walk. And I'll tell you, by reaching out to other people in this program, people taught me how to walk, and then they taught me how to run. And from the person who did not want to get up from her chair to go to the restroom at work, and that is the truth, I would wait and wait because I was that, I did not move. From that person, I became somebody who ran marathons. I don't do it anymore because I'm 67 years old. I know people 67 that do it, but I had to give it up because of my knees, basically, and because it was just hard on my body. But I became somebody that was able to run marathons. If that isn't the power of God and God's grace, nothing is. I, you know, to be abstinent all this time and to be able to grab a pair of pants from my closet and know that they're going to fit, pair of pants with a zipper. I guess after COVID, you got to qualify that, right? Because everything was leggings. But I'm not bragging that I have extremely old clothing, but I do have extremely old clothing, and those pants fit. So to be the same size, to actually be the weight that's on my driver's license, that is a miracle in and of itself, to tell the truth about my weight and then to have it, you know, be something that I'm willing to put in writing. To have all of those things, to me, is still, after 31 years, it still feels so foreign. And that's why I got so choked up, because I really truly believe that this is a day at a time. Even though I've been abstinent for a very long time, we eat every day. I believe that I could lose my abstinence as easily as anybody. And what that does for me is it keeps me very focused on the program. I have a lot of structure in my life. I sponsor other women. I talk to some of them on the phone in the mornings. And I have a structure, and I exercise every day, pretty much no matter what, because it helps me spiritually. It's not about even the physical part of it, it helps me spiritually and it calms me down. And I need that. And it helps me to have a connection with myself, which I told you I really was not interested in previously. And I have a lot of commitments at meetings since, in the beginning when I was new, I went to a couple of meetings a day on the weekend. I had commitments at least one, usually more, at the time. And I got to know people. I reached out. For me, because this is a disease of isolation, the cure to that is connection and connection with other women in the program. And as I said, that has been the greatest gift I've received. But, you know, what I do today is I walk once a week with one of my sponsees and with somebody who's an old timer in this program who has 40 some years of abstinence. And that is such a gift, you know, to be able to exercise with other people and spend time together. I walk with somebody else once a week. I go spinning. What I ended up doing when I stopped running was I started spinning, which might sound funny because I'm 67 years old and most of the people in that place are young enough to be probably my grandchildren at this point. But it's cool, you know? I get to do that. I'm willing to do that. I really like doing that. And I enjoy it at the time. And that said, I kid you not, every single day I think, I don't want to do this. I never want to do, there's a whole myriad of things that I don't want to do. And that voice is in my head all day long, every day. But what I learned here is to have smart feet, as somebody calls it, and just take the next indicated step. And because I have a structure in my life, to me that creates a level of insurance. And I believe in buying insurance. And for me, buying insurance is commitments, talking to other women, exercising. I send my food to my sponsor every day. I sent my food to my sponsor for the first many years. And then I thought, I don't need to do this anymore. And after a couple years, she said, I'm having trouble with my food. And so I'm sending my food to my sponsor. I think you should do it again too. And I thought, I'm not doing that. I don't want to do that. So I started doing that. And, you know, I think I do it pretty dutifully every day. And I write a gratitude list with my sponsor and my sponsees every day. And I, you know, it is a day at a time for me. I really believe that, you know, somebody that I know says, I don't know which one of those things it is that's keeping me abstinent. And for me, I believe it's all of it, you know, and I don't want to not do one of those things and have that be the third wheel, the third leg on the stool that makes me fall over. Not interested. So I'm immensely, immensely grateful for what I've been given. I have peace of mind today. As Jesse said, the promises have come true. Even though I do have fear of speaking, I was able in my chair to ask God to remove my fears and direct me. And I have a quality of life inside that is so much better than I ever imagined I would have. I am truly happy on a daily basis. And it's not something that is coming from an outside thing. It comes from what I'm willing to do on a daily basis to work my program. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I have a family that's extremely supportive of my abstinence. I'm very, very close to my niece, who's 33 years old, who's never seen me take a drink, smoke a joint, eat a whole pie, you know, eat ice cream. It's miraculous. And you know, the quality of the relationships that I have with friends and family today is genuine. You know, it used to be that the person that you connected with may or may not be the genuine person. For me, being able to be authentic and not have to make up stories or try to be something that I'm not was such a relief, because I was always trying to scramble, and it didn't work. And, you know, here in the rooms, I learned that it's okay to be whoever and whatever I am, and that I will be accepted. And not only have I been accepted, I have been given love that is and patience from other women, and you know, time, which I believe is the greatest, the most valuable thing that we have, is time. And somebody that's willing to give me their time is, I still can't believe that people are willing to do that for me. And yet I've learned here how to do that for another person. And I'm so, so grateful. I think that's really the thing that I want to transmit, is there's hope, because I never felt there was hope for me. I thought that the way things were was the way they would always be. You know, it's the way that my family had been, you know, obsessed with food and, you know, suffering health issues because of it. And I thought there was not hope. That's who I was destined to be, because that's what my family was. And, you know, I guess the cycle was broken with me. And one thing I'll say to end up, I'm very, very close to my brother-in-law. My sister died, I said, at age 50, and my niece was 19 years old. It was devastating for all of them, all of us, I should say. But I'm very close to my brother-in-law, and I'm grateful that I was able to make amends to my sister and my parents, to be a good sister and a good daughter before my parents passed away, and make amends to them. And what my brother-in-law said to me is, did you ever consider how the one decision that you made to, you know, come into OA, to work the steps, to stick with the program, has had such a far-reaching effect for our family? And it just totally chokes me up when I think about that. I'm not probably stating it as beautifully as he did, and he's not in the program, but he texted that to me, and I printed it out so I could have it to remember. Well, no, because it's true. It really encapsulates everything about the program, is that one person takes an action, and it's like throwing some, you know, the stone in the pond. It has an effect for so many people around us. So I'm really, really grateful. Thank you again for asking me, I think. And I guess, do we have time for questions?
Yes, questions.
Okay, will do. Yes, Jesse.
Thank you so much, Debbie. You talked about being unavailable and attracting unavailable people in the past, and then now, like, having these relationships that are genuine, and having a relationship with your sponsor that's lasted decades. Can you attribute anything in particular to that shift?
The question was, I was unavailable, I did not have relationships, genuine relationships with people, and that shifted, and what do I attribute that to? And, you know, I will say action. Yes, a higher power was involved for sure, but the action of showing up for another person, to another person, being willing to be honest with a sponsor, and take that risk of, you know, what I thought was possibly going to be rejected, which was totally the opposite of what I received. But being willing to take those actions are what changed everything. So thank you for asking that question. Yes.
Can you tell the story of how you relied on your higher power to get out of one position and into another?
Yes. Seppi's asking about how did my higher power help me to leave a job which was compromising my integrity, and how did I leave that job? And I had been at that company 18 years. I was a compliance person, the director of compliance for this company, and they were not compliant. And it was a horrible situation because I kept trying to change the situation, and the owner of the company would say, yes, 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 I will absolutely do that. And within hours, he was back to the same stuff. And, you know, I tried to do the right thing. I tried to change things. I wrote inventory about it. I asked my higher power for help. And all I can tell you is the way that I left that company was nothing short of miraculous. I really had no intention of quitting the day that I left the company, but because of all the compliance problems, I had worked with the company's attorney pretty closely. And it was like one more thing, and the owner of the company saying, why did you let this happen when it was not something that I had allowed to happen? In fact, the whole situation was in the works before I even found out about it. But anyway, the long and the short of it was, I had never done this before, but I said to my boss, I am not feeling well. It was 11 o'clock in the morning. I am going to go home. Because I had had enough. And my sponsors, both my AA and OA sponsors, kept saying, when is this going to be enough? But I thought, I have to have another job. I can't quit without another job. And yet I was like so invested in my work, in being present, in trying to, you know, help this situation, which, by the way, 5 years later is exactly the same as it was then. So I called the company's attorney and I said, I just walked out. I can't do this anymore. They're doing the stuff that, you know, we know about and they vowed not to do. And other companies outside this company, it was an apparel company that produced licensed products. So the companies that were licensing to us trusted us because of me. And I just said, Mark, I can't do it anymore. I became very clear that I was going to either lose my sobriety and abstinence or something big was going to happen because of the situation. And, you know, I can't handle those kinds of situations. Anyway, that ended up being my last day. I called Seppi. She's like, go to a meeting. I had just pulled in my garage. I turned back around and went out and went to a noon meeting. And it was like I was picked up and carried. And if somebody had told me the way that things had unfolded, I would not have believed them. I mean, the company gave me, I quit, and the company gave me a severance. It's totally unheard of. And I was able to spend, I had a dog for 16 and a half years who I absolutely adored. She was very old at the time. I was able to take time off and spend her last months with her. And then a friend in OA said, my friend needs someone at her company, and it was something totally different. And I thought, I want to be a compliance person. I want to make a lot of money. I want, you know. But what I've learned how to do here, as I said, is to say yes. So I said, sure, I'll go talk to your friend. And I worked for that company that I, you know, was fixed up by my OA friend. And it is not only a compliant company, they're the most lovely, kind, ethical people you would ever want to meet. It was literally like I was picked up from one place and dropped into another. And there's no other explanation for that than a higher power. You know, that for me is the God of my understanding. because I felt at the time like I was totally picked up and carried. And it does choke me up. And I'm able to work part-time now, which I never thought I would be able to do that. I mean, sometimes when I'm outside with my dog at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm like, whoa, you know, I mean, I feel like I'm like cheating. Anyway, I need to wrap it up, but I am truly, truly grateful. Thank you again so much.